From New York's Q2 Music, this is Meet the Composer, the show that mines the brains of classical musicians. There's kind of a stunning directness to the pedagogy of classical music. As a violinist, you can study with a woman who studied with a guy, who studied with a dude, who studied with Joachim, who premiered the Brahms Violin Concerto. In composition, the same rules apply. There have even been entire composition studios whose membership has made up most of a major musical movement, such as the Second Viennese School's Schoenberg and his students Berg and Webern. Along those lines, today's guest, Irish composer Donegha Dennehy, has had a pretty interesting musical education. You spent some time in Paris with the spectral icon Gerard Griset. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
You know, I actually wrote to Griset, and I sent him some of my music at the time when I was Neil Nog, because I was thinking of returning to York. He wrote me this lovely note that it was really powerful music and that I could come and study with him at the Paris Conservatoire if I want. So I actually turned up at the Paris Conservatoire, and I could see instantly he was really disappointed when he saw me because he thought I was a woman. Yeah, because my name ends in an A. And I instantly could see, oh, this is not what he expected. But I sat in a few of those classes and I found them very hierarchical, you know, it was words from the master, no disrespect, but. And they were all writing the same type of music and all the same type of surface. Now, others like James Tenney thought of it in a much more kind of platonic, theoretical way that this is the overtone series, you know, you have the first harmonic, the second harmonic, the third harmonic, and they have this particular kind of tuning to each other. And he would just write these pieces that kind of traversed in a kind of monolithic way through the overtone series. And they're really beautiful pieces, like Critical Band. Whereas the French guys did it more based on analysis of real sounds. So I found what's amazing when you use this kind of stuff in your harmony is that you actually produce timbre as well. It's not just harmony. That's the amazing thing. And it's hard to just sort of say unless you do it and you feel it. And you can even feel it like the way things resonate. You really produce these kind of new timbres as well. And that's what drew me to it. What I didn't like about French spectral music, on the surface, in terms of the gestures of the way the pieces worked, it was all part of this kind of modernist discourse.
So you felt like, even though they were using this tool, which you find incredibly evocative and very, very attractive, they were just applying that to a whole style of modernism that didn't really appeal to you.
Yes, yeah. Now, there were pieces that, for me, were real landmarks. In particular, Griset, Les Espaces Acoustiques, this collection of seven pieces. That's a real important statement. Then it became a kind of an acceptable style, and people became more concerned with the kind of surface of it and what was allowed, you know, a certain type of spectrally influenced modernism, which didn't really interest me because I was more interested in the kind of ecstatic repetition, you know, which comes more from minimalism or post-minimalism, you know.
So what happened after you studied with Griset for a little bit? Where did you move?
Actually didn't end up studying with him. I sat in for a few and I decided to go to Holland. So I went to go to the Institute of Sonology and actually, I ended up mainly hanging out with Louis Andriessen, who became a kind of mentor. So it's the polar opposite. Louis wouldn't do anything with overtones, but I really clicked with Louis. He didn't seem too disappointed that I wasn't a woman.
Yeah, well, when I think about Griset's music, I can sort of, I almost visually picture it in a very visually different way than I picture Andriessen.
Yeah.
Whose music, well, how would you describe the music of Louis Andriessen?
Louis is more interested in the kind of visceral type of music. It's strongly influenced by Stravinsky in a way, but it's Stravinsky on acid, sort of minimalistically applied, as it were. He's really strong on this kind of motoric gestures, which then suddenly slab into each other. And also he's politically engaged. So, I mean, there was I always had an attraction to Andreessen's music since I heard Destart. It has this kind of real excitement. And he took a lot from minimalism, but it was dirtier. He felt it was his. He had made his own. I mean, it was obvious he was massively influenced. If you listen to the music before he discovered the early minimalists, and he discovered them just as they were happening, and then what happened when he discovered like early Glass and Reich, it was a huge change in his music. But it's his music too, you know, and it really feels strong. And you know, sometimes if you feel not in, so, you know, it's a slow morning, stick on the start and it's like, wow.
So after studying in Ireland, Illinois, Paris, and the Netherlands, Donica found himself back in his hometown of Dublin with a job as lecturer at Trinity College. Worried he would fall into a purely pedagogical, performance-free lifestyle, Donica set about founding his own new music group, the Crash Ensemble.
That's right.
Sort of another hat that you wear.
Yeah.
Is that sort of a radically different job than that of composer?
No, not really. I mean, when I returned to Ireland after these studies, I was a bit worried that, because I'd got a job in Trinity lecturing in music, and I was a bit worried that that would become my life then. I actually was in fear of it. I mean, I really enjoyed it, but I didn't want that just to be it. So I sort of, out of panic, decided I have to set up my own new music ensemble because I won't have an outlet for my music otherwise in Dublin.
It's interesting because I feel like there are so many composers where their brass ring is sort of an academic teaching post, so they can just sit there in their studio and write music and teach and have their little quasi-monastic existence.
Yeah.
But I guess that was really not only not what you wanted, but kind of horrifying to you?
It was, yes. Yeah, I was terrified of that because I also, in a way, they didn't hire me because they wanted me to teach everything in a way. When I first started, it was teaching 20 hours. So it wasn't that they were sort of, we want you to compose. And I mean, now they are, but I think at the start, they probably didn't care whether I composed or not. It was to teach classes in composition and in music technology. And you could easily just get into that. And I suppose I didn't want to just compose in isolation because I thought there would be no outlet for me to hear it. You know, you have a feedback mechanism when you have an ensemble. And it was vital for me, I think, in developing my voice. I mean, I felt really lucky. It was hard work, though. In the early days, I would often stay up through the night, like, really, because I'd have to be writing these new lectures. Then I was setting up the group and composing, and I had very little sleep for a while.
This piece is called Junk Box Fraud, and it was the first piece he wrote for Crash in its inaugural year of 1997. So bear in mind, Donica is developing curricula both in composition and music technology while taking a Crash course in arts admin, so to speak. This piece is a great example of how Donica expertly blends electronics with acoustic instruments. Do you feel like you're inspired by the possibilities of technology, or do you feel like you're using technology to sort of create an unattainable mental thing?
I'm not inspired necessarily by technology. I'm not a tech geek at all. In fact, I have a new phone that I got through AT&T, you know, here, and it's an Android. I barely know how to operate it. It's like, oh, man, and then I'm trying to text. It's really... So I'm not I'm not trying to get the newest. You know, there are people who are early adopters. Alan Pearson, for example, he knows instantly how to use it, and so I'm actually not like that. But what I do think of it is I can accomplish things that I can't necessarily accomplish without it, and in particular, that's a kind of sonic thing. I'm really interested in it for a kind of new sonic possibilities. And especially in these pieces where I'm using, where essentially they're for instruments and retuned instruments and then bringing out elements of the resonance. And there I find technology really useful.
So So the first piece of yours that I ever did hear was Gragas Boss, which we'll hear in just a little bit on the show. But one of the things that strikes me about that piece is how kind of ballsy it is to write a piece called Love and Death, and how much emotional content there is in this work. Is this something that has always been really sort of a big influence in your music?
Yeah, I certainly got tired with titles like Synchronism and things like that. I mean, so, you know, new music for so long was trying to be completely removed, you know, in this almost like this a scientific kind of thing. But there was a kind of conversion for me along the way. I mean, you know, I had been a proper grad student and properly ironic. And I love irony in music as well. And even when I set up Crash, you know, I had these pieces like Junkbox Fraud. They're full of kind of energy, but they have a kind of ironic edge to them as well. And I suppose around 2005, I wrote this piece for violin and orchestra, which is quite overtly emotional in places. And I really felt this was a kind of a change where I didn't mind having this in my music. But, you know, I need it. I need it as an outlet. And so I thought, well, if I need it, it should be in the music. But you have to be wary of it too. I don't want to... Even though there's a strong emotional content in my music, I also wanted to try and be a new way of expressing it and not too neo-romantic or anything like that. That somehow using new materials, I still allow it in. I mean, there are huge disadvantages to being Irish because we don't have this massive structure like they have in other European countries for supporting new music. But there are also advantages, and that is the sense of liberty. And I actually wouldn't give up the liberty for the other things. So in a way, I feel the liberty to do what I want. So I suppose from Elastic Harmonic on, it certainly became more overt.
Donica's imbuing his work with his very human experiences can come across as almost audacious. It grips you. It puts your life in illuminating relief.
I actually need to write music. You know, it's a fundamental need. It's probably a diagnosable mental disorder.
Let's listen for a few minutes. to hear more of this piece, Elastic Harmonic, or any other piece from the program, you can go to our website, q2music.org/meetthecomposer. Stick around, because after the break, we'll hear how Irish Shannon singing is blended with the harmonic series to create something totally new. Stay tuned.